the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Beyond the Pitch. And I'm Juan Arango here, going all over the place. The past few days, I've been all over talking to people from all over the world, and that's going to keep on going. And today, well, I mean, I haven't talked a lot of La Liga, although those of you that follow me on Twitter know that I talk a lot about La Liga and everything else. But I really got to get people that are really feeling the pulse of what's going on in Spain. And to me, that's very important. So now, the gentleman I have with me, Irish freelance journalist over in Madrid, More specifically, I think he lives over in Vallecas, if I'm not mistaken. I might get correction from that as soon as I get him on here. He works with us, amongst other types of media outlets, but he really has a good pulse of what's going on in Madrid as well as all throughout Spain. None other than Mr. Robbie Dunn. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, Juan? I'm good. I actually don't live in Vallecas. I live in Barajas, which is the airport, but I'm right down the road, and I just changed my Twitter profile to my heart is in Vallecas, if that's what you meant.
Oh no, actually, I don't know. One of the people, I think he lives in Vallecas or something. Some of the people that were asking me, I'm like, okay, cool. I guess I got the wrong information wrong, but hey, you know.
I'm just down the road from it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you get all the airplanes flying over your house, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that must be a pleasure. I get all the trains passing by because I have a train. You know, I have like about a quarter of a mile away. I have like train tracks. I sympathize with you, Robbie. Man, let's take it from the top as far as La Liga is concerned. Barcelona, and that was something that I mentioned yesterday. Each coach that comes in, for the most part, for Barcelona has led some type of resurrection, and that's the case with Ernesto Valverde. What he's done with this club has been nothing short of incredible, despite the standards that Barcelona has established throughout the past decade. I mean, what has he been able to do inside the club? Because if you look at this team back in July and early August, when they were absolutely pummeled by Madrid in the Spanish Super Cup, and see what they're doing now, what has he been able to implement that has been able to put this team so far ahead of the rest on the pitch as well as off?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question, and it's a very very interesting one, because we don't actually know what he's done behind the scenes, but in terms of and the first two games that they played, they lost to Real Madrid in the Supercopa, and it looked like it was all downhill. They had lost Neymar, they had it looked like it was turmoil inside the club. But Ernesto Valverde has come in, and his presence in the press conferences and things like that have been absolutely massive. He's just so calm. He's provided Barcelona with some kind of a sense of assurance with themselves after such a turbulent summer, which is not a stretch to say at all, because after who they had lost and what had happened and losing Luis Enrique and things like that. And then on the field, I suppose, in a tactical sense, he's made them so much more pragmatic and more practical. Like, I mean, we know Barcelona is a very attacking team and things like that. And he's made them more practical. And I was just saying there that I can't see Barcelona being beaten by any side over two legs. And it's not the fact that they're playing so well, which they are, by the way, but it's more about, I think Valverde is going to be able to adapt to whatever situation presents itself. And I think that I think that's the one thing he's provided Barcelona with, is this pragmatic, practical approach. They're far more defensive now than they were, which might seem like a bad thing, but it's actually really good, because they're more defensive, which actually allows them to be more attacking. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but the fact that they know that their house is locked up at the back, they can actually press on more, and the likes of Messi, as he always has been, and Suarez and players like this, have the chance to express themselves, I suppose, a little bit more freely. But yeah, like, I mean, Ernesto Valverde has turned the club around, really, based on their La Liga exploits last year, and this year they're genuine contenders. Not the most exciting contenders they've ever been, but Barcelona are absolutely excellent this year.
Yeah, it's interesting you said, because Messi was asked about that the other few weeks ago, and he said that he sees that this team is much better defensively without Neymar. I mean, it's not a knock on him, it's just that offensively that was his I guess you could say his tendency to be more worried about going forward than dropping back and being part of the group. But you see how it's changed. Instead of that 4-3-3, now it's more of a 4-4-2, maybe a little variation here and there, and that allows Coutinho to go up when he's playing. How do you see the additions, especially Felipe Coutinho? You also see what Jerry Mina's been able to do, and of course we can't say anything less about what Paulinho's been able to contribute.
Oh, absolutely, Juan. I mean, in terms of the way that, and I said it before there, Barcelona were ridiculed regarding their transfer policy and the way that Neymar was handled, and then they were fighting for Coutinho, and they were going in with bids of all kinds of money, and Barcelona were being laughed at. And all of a sudden, they've turned themselves into one of the best teams in Europe. As far as the left-hand side of things go, Jordi Alba has become the kind of player, and he said it the other day, he said that he prefers playing without Neymar because he has so much freedom. And I mean, when you watch Messi and him combining on the left-hand side, it's so hard to defend against. And then you've got any central defender will appreciate the fact that it's a little bit more closed in the way that Barcelona are playing. So you got Pique, Vermaelen has come back into his own and stayed a little bit healthy, and I know he's out injured now at the moment, but he's another option. You've got Yerry Mina arriving, and all of a sudden Barcelona's transfer policy looks like it's absolute genius. Like, you know, Paulinho arrives in, and he's very he just gives, back to what I was saying before, it's more practical, more pragmatic, more a little bit more solid in terms of how Barcelona play. And that's something that adds to every aspect of the field, because when you have the likes of Paulinho, who's just a box-to-box midfielder, and he's been absolutely excellent since he arrived, and he's arrived in, and I just think it adds to every single aspect of the field. And I think Barcelona have done exceptionally well in the transfer market with the likes of Coutinho, who can't play in the Champions League, but he offers something, just so many different options for Valverde to mess around with and play around with. And then Dembele will arrive back at some point, and all of a sudden you've got a team that it's so hard to plan against, it's so hard to defend against. And we're looking at one of the best teams in Europe, like, at the moment.
You notice that we've gone about 8 minutes or so, we haven't mentioned Lionel Messi.
Messi, yeah.
We haven't mentioned Messi or Suarez in this whole conversation as of yet. And he's gone through an evolution. Suarez in the Copa del Rey semis against Valencia, that second match, he takes over, and he becomes an assist man. And you didn't see that that relationship between Luis Suarez and Neymar. I think there was a stat that I think within like the first year that they were playing together, Neymar had zero assists for Luis Suarez as far as goals were concerned. So, I mean, that was telling in and of itself as well. But also what intrigues me is the difference. We've seen, and you mentioned it, Robbie, how this team is more compact. It's not as stretched out as Luis Enrique had it, because Luis Enrique was so direct, so vertical, that sometimes the midfield got caught in situations where they were very compromised. And also from an attitude standpoint, before you answer the question, you see a much more calm Valverde compared to a more fiery, a more combative Luis Enrique.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. Like, I don't know how much a manager can affect things on the sideline. Once the game starts, I'm not entirely sure what a manager can do, except for making a couple of substitutions, whatever. But I just think Valverde has offered this side a very, very calm demeanour. And like you were saying about Messi, he hasn't almost influenced... he has, of course, influenced this Barcelona side. He's the focal point. He's everything to Barcelona, and has been for as long as we can remember. But I just think that they're a much more complete side with Valverde. And Valverde... to his credit, because he came in after Luis Enrique had won all sorts of trophies, and all of a sudden Valverde has to take over, lose to Real Madrid in the Supercopa. I mean, this team was in turmoil, like, we have to remember that. And he's just been so calm and collected. Every single answer he gives in his press conferences is so cool and calm. I mean, I think that based on his calmness and the fact that he doesn't make headlines is something that'll take away from him. But we have to actually remember the fact that this man has turned his Barcelona side around, like, and he's made them more pragmatic, as I was saying. So against Valencia last night, they suffered for 45 minutes. Barcelona suffered, and they didn't concede. They came out then, and then they won. Okay, and what we'll remember is that Barcelona bet Valencia in this Copa del Rey semi-final. But Barcelona suffered, like, we have to remember that as well. And the fact that they might go on and win a Copa del Rey again, but we have to remember that they suffered, and Ernesto Valverde knew how to approach that. He knew how to deal with it. He knew what was going to happen. He knew how to diagnose the problem. He knew how to approach it. He knew how to respond to it. And yeah, like, I mean, I think I'm going to end another dialogue here with, or monologue with,
no, but I mean,
Barcelona are contenders, like, they're one of the best teams in the world right now, like,
yeah, and you could probably say that they are the best team in the world right now. I mean, despite Manchester City and what they're doing, but Manchester City, you haven't seen that upward curve in January, February. They've kind of gone a little bit stale, if you will, a little bit, but that also has a lot to do with their schedule too. Now let's switch over, Chris. Which conversation about Barcelona can be complete without talking about Real Madrid on the other end?
Absolutely, yeah.
And to see the phrase, you know, the famous phrase from Zinedine Zidane all the time, "Oh, I'm not worried." It always brings up that meme. You know, we see the little character on, you know, in a room on fire. He's like, "Yeah, looks fine to me." Is he still trying to, like, calm people down when people see that there are problems? Or is it just Madrid's press and Madrid's fans being overly, you know, in panic because they're 19 points behind their eternal rivals? What's kind of the thing that's going through it, especially you being in Madrid, the things that are said in the press there?
Like you said, Zinedine Zidane, I think when it first started out, I think he was very cool, calm, collected. But slowly but surely, he's starting to get annoyed, like, with how his players are playing, and the mistakes that they're making. I just wrote for ESPN, actually, my first article for ESPN yesterday. Yeah, and it was about the mental side of the game. I think Zidane believes that he has this team in peak condition. He's got them playing in the proper formation and things like that. But it's just so many mental errors that they're making. And I think that Zidane is a very cool customer, but slowly but surely it's starting to eat away at him. And I think you can see that in his press conferences as well. Before, he'd say nothing. He'd be very, very calm, collected, as you were saying. But now he's starting to get annoyed, like, and I think, okay, and this is the problem. I mean, you could predict PSG to beat Real Madrid 4-5, 6-7, 8-0, But this Real Madrid side has unbelievable amounts of quality. So on any given day, Real Madrid could beat any side in the world, as we know. But I think it's just starting to weigh on Zidane, the fact that the mistakes that they're making are just schoolboy stuff, and I think he's finding it harder and harder and harder to defend, because Real Madrid bet Deportivo La Coruña, hammered them at home, then bet Valencia, massive win in La Liga, and then all of a sudden they go out and draw with Levante, who are threatened with relegation, and just a very sloppy display, and they were under pressure. I just think that it's starting to weigh on Zidane. I think it's starting to weigh on the side, because they know then that they're capable of messing up and things like that. And I think that I'm not entirely sure that they can recover by the time PSG roll around.
Well, I mean, and you saw it too in the match against Leganés. It really got to a point that Madrid had nothing out there to really threaten a team that was very well organized, that was very well stacked in the back. That really, Madrid showed very little danger, very little threat as far as trying to really revert that situation and advance into the semis. But again, that's where you see Madrid fans so worried as well. That, of course, everything gets accentuated when Barca's doing well, when they're doing extremely well, even more so. Is it a case of looking for new players? Is it that the leadership up top needs to be changed? Or how do you do to reset, to have that reset button, especially after all the success Madrid's had?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting question, because I've been thinking about Real Madrid's recruitment at midfield. They've got a midfield that is perfectly functional at the moment. But when it comes to replacing the likes of Iggy Adamendi, who's gone back to Real Sociedad, they bought him and he was supposed to be kind of like a guy who would plug in and eventually take over from the likes of Modric and Cruz and things like that. Then they've got Ceballos who came in and was supposed to take over from these guys as well. And they're finding it very hard to kind of implement, to kind of push these guys into the first team. As we were saying with Valverde in Barcelona, he's got his side set up so well that they defend perfectly, whereas Real Madrid know that they don't defend all that well. So all of a sudden, the midfield and the attack struggles a little bit because they can't go all out. They can't throw the kitchen sink at it. And I think it's a very holistic thing, I suppose you'd say, in the fact that, And they know exactly how vulnerable they have been as well. So I think Real Madrid are in a really difficult situation in terms of the players that they buy, because they have to be careful. Well, they've bought for the future now, and some absolutely wonderful players, some great players. But it's a matter of how they fit into the team, what type of team they fit into, and when they fit into the team. We'll say the likes of Alvaro Morata, brilliant player, but he wants to start. So you're not you can't buy a player that wants to start and is sitting on the bench, and you say, oh no, hold on now, you're playing for Real Madrid now, you have to bide your time, you have to wait your time. And he's sitting there going, hold on, I'm a starter, I will start for every single team in Europe.
I mean, you make a point there, but Morata knew going into that particular situation that there's a chance he might not start. I mean, he was a starter at Juventus, but I mean, isn't that also on the player as well?
Yeah, no, he's a starter, Juan. He's got a kind of confidence that me and you do not understand. I'll win my place. I'm gonna start here. I'm gonna eventually convince them that I'm gonna start, and then all of a sudden it doesn't start to happen, and he's scoring goals and he's coming on and making changes in late in games, and then they're like, oh no, Benzema's still our guy, and all of a sudden. I think it's very hard for journalists and writers and people to understand the kind of confidence that these guys have. He believes that he is a starter, And he said, I'm going to go back to Real Madrid where I earned my stripes, and I'm going to start. I will win that place for myself. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't happen. Benzema remains the guy. And it's like, there's nothing that I can do here. And that's the same as kind of the likes of maybe Ceballos and players like that. And talking about money as well, like Ceballos can't turn down an offer from Real Madrid. Like, and he thinks, okay, I'm gonna eventually make my way into this team. Theo Hernandez, slightly different situation. Wanted to kind of piss off Atletico Madrid, we'll say. And but they think that they've got such a confidence in them that they're gonna win their place on this side. They're gonna make an impact. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't happen, and they're like, okay, what do we do now? Like, you know. Some of it's on the player, but that's their confidence.
No. You know? I mean, ultimately, it's their career. I mean, they can go wherever they want and do whatever they want. I was just like, well, you know the situation there. You get into it, so okay. And I mean, it's obviously you have to see it from the player perspective, and you have a point there. But you look at defensively as well, and you see that there's a tendency for Madrid to go a little bit too far up on the attack, thus leaving at times a player like Casemiro all alone in the middle. He has to patrol the middle all by himself. That, again, seems like a problem for them to be able to handle. And as soon as that midfield gets broken and they have to go to Casemiro, he's like sometimes on the 2-on-1 or those types of situations where he's not finding himself in the best possible matchup. That'll start really creating a lot of breakdowns defensively as well.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was pointed out about Real Madrid, is that Casemiro has got a little bit too confident, and not of his own accord or not of his own doing, but he started pushing up more, and that's why Real Madrid seemed to be so much easier to counter-attack against. And maybe last year and 2 years ago, Real Madrid were very, very more conservative. But now they've started to kind of come out of their shell a little bit. Casemiro has come out of his shell, and I think it comes down to Real Madrid, and Sergio Ramos said it. He said, we need to rely on our experience. We need to call on our experience. When we're winning 2-1 against Levante, with all due respect to Levante, a relegation threatened Levante. You're winning 2-1. Isco has just come off the bench and scored what it looks like is going to be the winner. You need to hold that lead, Juan. You need to hold the lead. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a football tactician. I'm not a manager. But, like, you need to hold on to that lead. And for a team like Real Madrid to lose that lead, that's heartbreaking. That kind of thing is absolutely, seriously... you know, and part of, and I don't know whose fault that is. It's partly mental errors made by the team. It's partly how Real Madrid maybe were set up and things like that. But it's a mental error made by the team. And we've seen the coverage after that goal, and Ramos telling Marcelo to put his foot in. You need to put your foot in, and giving out about and complaining about. You guys in America don't use giving out, do you?
We
say give out. That's an Irish thing. I think it's give out. We say to complain. Okay.
Yeah. So we use like, you know, give out.
Yelling at someone. Yeah. No, but it was Ramos was giving out to Marcelo. Put your foot in, like you need to know how to hold this lead and things like that. But yeah. I mean, I think that weighs heavily on them.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I think that's the problem. It's more mental than anything else, and that's been, I guess it's been central to our conversation per se. How the mental aspect of the game has changed at both of those clubs, but one that continues being always, I guess, in the shadows a little bit, maybe a little bit further out than usual, is Atletico Madrid. I mean, with Diego Simeone this year, they really haven't made all the headlines. They got eliminated from Champions League. They're only on one, pretty much in only one, two competitions from here on out. Do you see them looking to make a run, or they're just way too complicated at times offensively?
I suppose it comes back down to how well Barcelona are doing. Like, I can't see Barcelona tripping up, so it's not actually dependent on Atletico. It's dependent on how whether or not Barcelona trip up. But yeah, like, I mean, Atletico have been doing well, but like, it's such a difficult one to speak about Diego Simeone and Atletico Madrid, because you've got a really difficult situation there, because Diego Simeone has brought that team on so much that they're like, compared to what they were before, Diego Simeone has turned them into a proper side. But I would say that, when does it come time to kind of maybe make some kind of a change? And I'm not saying that it's time. Diego Simeone needs to make the decision on his future. And the club, if they ever sack him or things like that, it's completely wrong, because he is the man there. But I just watched him a lot, and I'm kind of like wondering at what stage of development they need to kind of make a change, I suppose. And yeah, like, I mean, in terms of La Liga, it just comes down to whether Barcelona mess up or not. Europa League, they can win any tournament they're in based on their defensive record and how Simeone deals with those situations. But I just wonder, like, I mean, maybe with Diego Costa and things like that, and he's got some absolutely wonderful players there with the likes of Saul and Lucas Hernandez coming through, Jimenez, players like that. Oblak is world class. But I just wonder how far more he can take them. So it just depends really on what Diego Simeone decides to do, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, we talked about the big three in Spain, and I'm here with Robbie Dunn over in Madrid. Robbie, we talked about the big three. Now I guess we can talk about the medium-sized three, which are, if you want to look at them from that way, is Valencia, Villarreal, and Sevilla. We'll start with Sevilla because they'll be playing in the Copa del Rey final. They've had a lot of turmoil this season. They lost to Betis in the Andalusian, in the Betis derby. They sacked Toto Berizzo despite, in a very controversial way, after having gone through prostate cancer surgery. A week later, he gets sacked. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Sevilla fan, you kind of get that the writing was on the wall with him. How is this team looking under Vicenzo Montella? How do you see it? Was there a change? Is there a change that was made by Montella as soon as he took over this team? Or is it just, you know, Sevilla going their usual route?
Yeah, like, it's such a hard one, because I actually, before Berizzo got diagnosed with cancer and before he suffered from that, I thought, and most people thought, that Sevilla weren't actually playing that well, which they weren't. But I mean, how much of it, and it comes down, I suppose, to our modern football approach, how much was that down to the loss of Monchi? Like they had lost
exactly.
A guy who... So is that, so how much of the fault lies at Barito's feet, and then all of a sudden, it's so hard, it's such a difficult situation.
I mean,
because
you can literally make an argument though that Sevilla haven't played well, I mean, like, really well, since the first half of last season, when Jorge Sampaoli was still focused on being the coach of Sevilla.
Now, absolutely.
As soon as his mind strayed, Sevilla just, you know, crash landed to the end of the season.
Yeah, like, I mean, and you're looking at losing your director of football, losing a couple of players who were sold and things like that. And then, I mean, Barito had a massive job on his hands to come in and try to make something happen, which he did. Like, I mean, they're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They're up there challenging in Champions League places in La Liga. All of a sudden... Okay, they're not playing well particularly, but they sacked their manager, which is understandable in some cases, but it was just kind of embarrassing for the club. The fact that they had welcomed him back from his cancer surgery, things, it was very embarrassing. But at the same time, in terms of if you look at the processes behind it, they needed to make a change, and if they're going to wait any longer, they'd have to wait for the winter transfer market. Are they going to buy players under a manager that they didn't believe in for another couple of months and wait and see how it goes. They made the decision, which credited them in that respect, but it was a difficult one to make. Montoya came in, and he was laughed out of the place because they lost to Betis when he had just arrived and things like that. And all of a sudden they started to change the tide. They've got really, really, really good players. The likes of Nzonzi has come back into the fold and things like that. They've got a really good squad, a really good set of players. If Montoya doesn't work out, and they get rid of him in the mid and at the end of the season, how much is down to Monchi again? Like, I mean, like, you're looking at, it's a massive, the role of the football director, it's so big nowadays that a lot of the times it's more important that than the actual manager. But no, I mean, Montoya has done well and won a couple of very, very important games that will keep him in his job, but he's lost a couple too. So I mean, it's just too hard, it's too soon to tell, I suppose, and it's too quick to make a diagnosis.
Yeah. Now, with there's two teams, and I'll leave Villarreal aside for just a second. If there's two teams that you didn't expect to have such a good season, one, you know, would be Valencia. Even Marcelino Garcia Toral last night, after the Copa del Rey semi-final second leg, he's like, if you would have talked to us in June or in August that we'd be playing Barcelona in the semis and we'd be where we were on the table despite having a poor run of form, we'd take it. And that's interesting to hear what he said. Interesting to hear that he says, well, look, of the six matches that we've lost in recent weeks, two of them were against Barcelona, one of them was against Atleti, and another one was against Real Madrid. So he still says that he's very proud of his team. Overall, if you are a Valencia fan, how do you see their performance so far this season?
I would say it's off the chart, Juan. It's incredible how well they've done, and they're a victim of their own success in terms of how bad they looked last season. And I mean, this is the problem with modern football and the way that we look at things nowadays. Okay, they've lost six games, or their results in the last six games haven't been great. But this side was relegation threatened last year. Like, I mean, this side was, they were on the brink. And all of a sudden, Marcelino is competing against Barcelona. They're competing, they're fighting for a Champions League spot. I mean, it's just, the issue is modern football, I'd say, and the immediacy of everything. We need everything now. They have to be in the Champions League now. They have to win something now. They need a trophy. It's quite kind of similar, I suppose, in a less dramatic sense than Pochettino at Spurs. Like, I mean, everyone's saying he needs to win a trophy. No, like, the process is right. Like, the process that Marcelino has set up in Valencia is absolutely incredible. Like, they're doing well. Everything's going good. They're going to lose these games. They're going to draw some games. They're going to struggle at times. But, I mean, in terms of how they are compared to last year, like, I mean, two different sides, two different clubs, two different teams, like, you know. And I think anyone that suggests otherwise is suffering from some kind of modern football idiocy, I suppose.
I'm skipping Villarreal. I wanted to go and say, to me, the surprise team, maybe not even surprise team anymore because they've already had pretty good campaigns in previous years going up in the second division, is Eibar. I mean, they've been solid yet again. I don't know. Maybe you don't agree with me. Maybe you're looking at somebody else. But do you think that Eibar, I mean, they're still within striking distance of European spots. Do you agree that that is the case, that Eibar is probably the surprise team again?
Oh, absolutely. I think I just read an article the other day about their, and it comes back down to this. Some things stick in your head and things like that. I read an article in The Blizzard by Sid Law with Juan Malillo, and he was talking about the process of things. And I'd be a huge fan of, say, Paco Gemes and managers like that, and saying about it's all about the process. It's all about the process. Eibar, And I read an article the other day, and it was saying basically Eibar, their process is spot on. Like, I mean, it's so, the way that they approach games is absolutely brilliant. And okay, they're not going to light the place on fire, some maybe, and they're not going to draw massive crowds, maybe. But their process and how Mandelibar attacks, he's absolutely brilliant. And I think that I think that if they made Europe. Maybe not this year, but in the next year or two, it will be a massive feat for coaches like that and managers like that, because as you said, like they're not the most attractive team, I suppose, in terms of stature, but they are absolutely brilliant to watch. They're nice to watch. They know what they're doing, and I just think that they're absolutely excellent.
Yeah, I agree with that point. I think that's the case with well, not just Eibar, but many teams in La Liga, that they might not be the most aesthetically pleasing, but they're very organized, and with that organization comes a little bit more excitement, if you will, as far as how they play. So I mean, yeah, it's interesting. But one last question, Robin. First of all, I want to thank you for being on the show. And there's one team, and we have to go all the way to the bottom of the table there. A couple of years ago, what was it? Malaga was one Felipe Santana goal away from getting to the semifinals of the Champions League. Fast forward about 4 or 5 years, and they are dead last at the bottom of the table in La Liga. You thought that the millions were going to be coming in. You had at one time Manuel Pellegrini, the coach of Malaga. You had some quality players there, and all of a sudden, that's nowhere to be seen anymore. What gives?
What gives is, it's a hard one, because they started to slide last year, and then all of a sudden Michel came in, and I feel like he was doing a good job. Like it's such a difficult one, because he was doing a really good job in terms of how he's managing expectations, but they just kept losing. And we talked about processes and the way you play and everything like that. And they were actually playing okay, like nice football, but they just kept losing. And I was like, okay, the owner is going to make a change. Week after week, he's not making a change. Michel is the guy. And they kept losing. And it's like, as we said, like nowadays, maybe 20 years ago, it would be the case of we'll stick by our guy. Whereas with Malaga, they stuck with him and they just kept losing. And the owner didn't want to make a move. And Michel was saying all the right things, and he was doing all the right things, and he was trying his best. But they just kept losing. So they've got a really good squad, and probably needed to invest more money in players in the summer and in winter. They didn't, and Michel, every week when they lost, okay, that's it. Now Michel's gone. Nope, he's sticking around, and it was just a really difficult one. And it'd be bad to see Malaga out of the Primera division, but it looks like that's the way it's going to go, because they've just lost too many games. And good team, good side, good players, but they just can't seem to get it together, like, you know.
From the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world, from wherever the beautiful game is played, this is BTP. Now, we're talking football.